This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Borscht Club on ORFM, where we stir up vibrant stories, rich traditions, and the voices of the Ukrainian community. Grab a seat. It's time to dive into something truly special. Hello, everyone. How are you? Привіт, як справи? There is one thing I noticed after moving to New Zealand. Whenever we talk about Ukraine, we usually talk about its people, its cities, its traditions, or its history. But we rarely talk about its nature. Perhaps that's because nature is difficult to describe with words. It needs to be seen, heard, and experienced. Of course, there have always been writers and poets who could do exactly that. When you read their work, it feels as if you're walking along a forest path in the Carpathian Mountains or standing in the middle of the vast forests of Polisse. Ukraine's landscapes have inspired artists for centuries. Taras Shevchenko wrote about mighty oak trees, willows, and peaceful groves as symbols of his homeland. Lesya Ukrainka made a forest in the Polisse region the central character of her masterpiece, The Forest Song, filling it with mavkas, forest spirits, and other creatures from Ukrainian folklore. In his novella Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors, Mykhailo Kotubinsky portrayed the Carpathians as a living world where people exist in harmony with nature and ancient legends are woven into everyday life. And in his autobiographical work The Enchanted Desna, Oleksandr Dovzhenko lovingly recalled the forests, rivers, and meadows of his childhood in northern Ukraine. For Ukrainian writers, a forest was never just a backdrop to the story. It had its own character, its own mood, and even its own soul. That is why in Ukrainian literature, nature is often a character in its own right. It shapes people's lives, influences the way they see the world, and helps their understanding themselves. For the rest of us, though, describing nature is much harder. It's very easy to fall into a list of facts that sounds more like a geography book than a story. But nature isn't about numbers or statistics. It's the smell of pine after the rain, the morning mist rising over a wetland, the gentle rustle of beech leaves, and the silence that is broken only by birdsong. So today I'm going to take on that challenge. I will do my best to put into words something that's much easier to experience than to describe. And I'd like to take you on a journey through the forests of Ukraine. Why forests? At first, it might seem like an unusual choice for a radio program. But the more I prepared for this episode, the more I realized that Ukrainian forests are about so much more than trees. They have fed generations of people, provided shelter during wars, inspired poets and artists, preserved ancient legends. In Ukrainian forests, you will find trees that are several hundred years old, hidden underground bunkers built by resistance fighters. And one forest that, after the world's worst nuclear disaster, unexpectedly became home to wolves, European bisons, and even Przewalski horses. So today I'd like to take you on a journey through the forests of Ukraine, places as diverse, mysterious, and fascinating as the country itself. If you asked a New Zealander to picture Ukraine, they would probably think of sunflower fields, golden wheat, and endless open plains. And that's perfectly understandable. Ukraine is often called the breadbasket of Europe, and those vast agricultural landscapes are certainly part of its identity. But Ukraine is far more diverse than many people realize. We have the Carpathian Mountains, two seas, the Black Sea and the Sea of Azov, vast steppes, the wetlands of Polisse, one of Europe's largest sand massifs, the Oleshky Sands, and of course forests. Forests cover about 10.5 million hectares of Ukraine's territory. Interestingly, that's almost the same total forest area as New Zealand. The difference is that forests cover around 38% of New Zealand, while in Ukraine they account for only about 16% of the country's land area. Traveling through Ukraine's forests can sometimes feel as if you're crossing the borders of different countries. The ancient forests of the Carpathians look like something out of a fairy tale, lush, dense, and almost untouched. Police say is a land of pine forests, wetlands, and quiet rivers. Podile is famous for its majestic oak groves, while in the far south, among the endless steppes, vast pine forests rise where you would least expect them. Each of these forests has its own character, its own stories, and its own history. Some Ukrainian forests are so unusual that they have become known far beyond Ukraine's borders. One of them is the Red Forest near Chernobyl. Its story began on 26 April 1986, when reactor number 4 at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant exploded. This nearby pine forest received one of the highest doses of radiation. The exposure was so intense that many of the pine trees died within just a few days. Their needles first turned yellow and then changed to a distinctive reddish-brown color. That is how the forest came to be known as the Red Forest. Because the dead trees were heavily contaminated with radioactive material, they posed an ongoing risk, particularly if forest fires spread radioactive particles into the air. Much of the forest was cut down, and the trunks and other contaminated vegetation were buried in specially constructed trenches and disposal sites. Not all of the Red Forest was cleared, however. Some areas were left untouched, so scientists could study what happened over time. At the time, many believed this landscape would remain lifeless for generations. But something unexpected happened. As people left the exclusion zone, nature slowly began to reclaim it. It has become one of the world's most remarkable examples of ecological recovery. Villages were abandoned, farmland was no longer cultivated, roads became overgrown, and forests gradually expanded into places that had once been occupied by homes and fields. That doesn't mean the area is safe. The radioactive contamination has not disappeared, and scientists continue to document its harmful effects on some plants, animals, and their genetic material. So it would be wrong to say that radiation helped nature. It caused enormous damage. What changed was something else. People were gone. An area that became unsuitable for permanent human settlement turned into a vast refuge for wildlife. Today, the Chernobyl Radiation and Ecological Biosphere Reserve covers more than 226 hectares, making it one of the largest protected areas in Ukraine. It is home to hundreds of vertebrate species, including wolves, lynx, moose, red deer, otters, many rare birds, and even brown bears. One of the most famous residents of the exclusion zone is the Przewalski horse, the last truly wild horse species in the world. By the second half of the 20th century, it had disappeared from the wild and survived only in zoos. In 1998, a small group of these horses was introduced into the Chernobyl exclusion zone as an experiment. They adapted remarkably well, began breeding, and today roam the area in free-ranging herds. Scientists continue to monitor their movements and study how they use the landscape. The Chernobyl zone has also seen the return of the European bison, marking the first confirmed sighting of a wild European bison in the Kyiv Polisia region in more than 300 years. The Chernobyl Biosphere Reserve is not a fairy tale about the nature completely overcoming radiation. The reality is far more complex. Some species have returned and are thriving, while others continue to suffer the long-term effects of radioactive contamination. But the area clearly demonstrates how profoundly human activity shapes the natural world. Even in a contaminated environment, larger mammals gained more space once hunting, intensive farming, traffic, and continuous development disappeared. That is the great paradox of Chernobyl. The disaster made the area unsafe for people, but the absence of people created an opportunity for many wild animals to return. If the Red Forest tells a story of tragedy, then in western Ukraine there is another forest that has become a symbol of romance. Near the small town of Klevan in the Rivne region runs a narrow gauge railway that for many years was used by an industrial train. As it passed through the forest day after day, the train repeatedly brushed against the branches, naturally trimming them into the same shape. Over time, the trees grew together above the track, forming a spectacular green arch, almost 4 kilometers long. quite by accident, this became one of the Ukraine's most famous natural attractions, known as the Tunnel of Love. According to local legend, if two people in love walk through the tunnel together and make a wish, it will come true. Today, thousands of visitors from around the world come here every year, and the Tunnel of Love has repeatedly been listed among Europe's most romantic places. There is another Ukrainian forest with a rather mysterious name, the Black Forest. It is located in central Ukraine in the Kirovohrad region. No one knows for certain how it got its name, but the most widely accepted explanation is quite simple. The ancient oak and hornbeam trees formed such a dense canopy that very little sunlight reached the forest floor. Even in the middle of the day, the forest seemed unusually dark. It was probably this permanent twilight that gave the Black Forest its name. People have lived in this area for thousands of years. Archaeologists have discovered ancient settlements and burial mounds here, and the nearby Chornolis hill fort gave its name to the Chornolis archaeological culture of the early Iron Age. Centuries later, the dense forest became a natural refuge for Cossacks and the Haidamaki, the 18th century Ukrainian rebel groups. Local legends tell of weapons and treasure hidden deep in the forest during times of uprising. They say that somewhere among the ravines, ancient oak trees, and old burial mounds, those treasures are still waiting to be discovered. Even today, the Black Forest remains one of the most mysterious historical landscapes in central Ukraine. If you want to see what much of Europe looked like before large-scale logging began, then you should visit the Ukrainian Carpathians. This is where some of Europe's last remaining primeval beech forests have survived almost untouched by human activity. Some of the trees are more than 400 years old. Fallen trunks are left where they fall, young trees grow naturally in their place, and the entire ecosystem continues to function according to processes that have evolved over thousands of years. That is why these forests are recognized as a UNESCO World Heritage Site, as part of Europe's shared natural heritage. Further west, around the historic town of Kremenets, the forests combine nature, geology, and history in one remarkable landscape. Dense woodland, limestone cliffs, and a unique local climate have created a true hotspot of biodiversity. Dozens of rare plant species grow here, many of them protected by law, and on the hilltops, the ruins of medieval fortifications still stand. So a walk through these forests can easily become a journey across several different centuries. When most people think of the steppe, they imagine endless open grasslands with almost no trees. That's why the Samara Forest seems almost unbelievable. In the Dnipropetrovsk region, right in the middle of Ukraine's steppe, lies a vast natural pine forest covering more than 15,000 hectares. It is one of the southernmost natural pine forests in Europe. The contrast is striking. Open grassland stretches in every direction, yet in the middle of it stands a dense pine forest with its own microclimate, lakes and sandy soils. And now a story about how people created an entire forest. Many people have heard of the Oleshky Sands, one of Europe's largest sand massives. But far fewer know that during the 20th century, vast pine forests were planted around the sands to stop them from spreading. The Oleshky Sands are a natural landscape that has existed for thousands of years. But they were once much more stable. Steep grasses and other vegetation held the sand in place. During the 18th and 19th centuries, however, enormous flocks of sheep grazed these lands. As the animals overgrazed the vegetation, the protective plant cover disappeared. The exposed sand was then picked up by the wind, and the sandy areas began to expand rapidly. To stop this process, people started planting pine trees. Over several decades, hundreds of millions of trees were planted, creating one of the largest artificial forest landscapes in Europe. If you've ever walked through a forest, chances are it was one that had been shaped by people in one way or another. Trees were planted or cut down, roads were built, and fallen trunks were cleared away. But in the Ukrainian Carpathians, there are still places where nature has been following its own rules for centuries. These are known as primeval forests. They are forests that have never or only very rarely been altered by human activity. There are no neat rows of trees, no stumps left behind after logging. and no foresters clearing away dead wood or planting young saplings. Everything happens naturally, just as it has for thousands of years. That's why walking through a primeval forest is nothing like walking through an ordinary managed forest. Trees grow wherever nature has allowed them to take root. Some are young, while others have stood for several hundred years. Beside a giant beech tree, you might find the trunk of another that fell decades ago, but no one removes it. And that's not neglect. It's how a primeval forest works. A fallen tree marks the beginning of new life. As the wood slowly decomposes, it becomes home for fungi, insects, mosses, and hundreds of other organisms. This is one of the reasons why primeval forests support such extraordinary biodiversity. What might be considered waste in a managed forest is, in a natural one, the foundation of an entire ecosystem. The most famous of these are the primeval beech forests of the Carpathians. Some of the trees here are more than 500 years old. That means they were already growing when William Shakespeare was writing his plays. These forests are home to many animals that have become increasingly rare elsewhere in Europe, including brown bears, wolves, lynx, wild cats, red deer, and countless species of birds. The cool, damp Carpathian climate also provides ideal conditions for thousands of species of fungi, from tiny mushrooms that are easy to overlook to giant bracket fungi that can grow on the same tree for decades. Because of their exceptional value, the primeval beech forests of the Carpathians have been inscribed on the UNESCO World Heritage List. They are recognized not only as part of Ukraine's natural heritage, but as a part of the shared natural heritage of humanity. They offer a rare glimpse of what much of Europe's forests look like long before people began clearing them on a large scale to build towns, ships, and roads. Here you can still hear the wind moving through ancient tree canopies, witness the natural cycle of life and decay, and be reminded just how small we are beside a landscape that existed long before us and hopefully will continue to exist long after us. After exploring the majestic primeval forest in the Carpathians, let's travel north to the region of Polesia. If the Carpathians are defined by mountains, then Polesia is defined by water. It is a land of pine forests, rivers, lakes, and vast wetlands that have shaped not only the landscape but also the region's history for centuries. Wetlands are often associated with places that are dark, mysterious, and difficult to cross. But in Polesia, they became the region's greatest protector. The marshes made travel difficult, keeping large areas isolated for centuries. Where people could not easily settle or farm, nature was allowed to flourish. The forests of Polesia are very different from those of the Carpathians. Here, tall pine trees rise above carpets of moss, blueberry bushes, and cranberry plants. In late summer, local families head into the forest to gather blueberries. In autumn, they return for cranberries, and after heavy rain, for wild mushrooms. For many Ukrainians, this isn't just a pleasant day outdoors. It's a tradition that has been passed down from one generation to the next. Polesia is also one of Ukraine's most important refuges for wildlife. It is home to moose, the largest members of the deer family in Europe. Wolves, lynx, beavers, otters, and even European bison live in these forests. The European bison, the continent's largest land mammal, once disappeared from the wild entirely. Thanks to international conservation efforts, its population has been restored, and today these magnificent animals once again roam Ukraine's forests. Another symbol of Polesia is the black stork. Unlike the familiar white stork, which often nests close to villages and farms, the black stork avoids people whenever possible. It builds its nest only in quiet, mature forests, so its presence is considered a sign of a healthy and well-preserved ecosystem. Places like Polesia remind us what much of Europe once looked like. It doesn't impress visitors with towering mountains or dramatic scenery. Its beauty is quieter than that. It's the morning mist drifting across a wetland, the scent of pine resin in the air, the calls of cranes overhead, and the feeling that nature is still living according to its own rhythm. There is a reason Polesia is sometimes called the green lungs of Ukraine. It is one of the country's largest natural regions, and it has preserved so much of its original character precisely because its forests and wetlands protected it from intensive human development. For thousands of years, Ukraine's forests has been much more than a home for wildlife. They have been a pantry, a pharmacy, and a hardware store all at once. Long before supermarkets existed, people went to the forest for almost everything they needed. Forests provided timber for building houses, churches, bridges, boats, and wagons. Pine resin was used to make torches and medical ointment, and to waterproof wooden boats and barrels. People hunted game, gathered medicinal herbs such as linden flowers, chamomile, St. John's wort, and mint, and relied on traditional knowledge that was passed down through generations. Then there were the wild berries. Blueberries, blackberries, raspberries, wild strawberries, and cranberries, and of course, mushrooms. Mushrooms hold a very special place in Ukraine culture. If you ask a Ukrainian what they will likely to do after a few warm summer rains, there is a good chance that the answer will be, we're going mushroom picking. In fact, Ukrainians even have a special expression for it, quiet hunting. It is a wonderfully fitting name. There are no guns, no dogs, and no chasing prey. Instead, people walk slowly through the forest, carefully scanning the moss, leaves, and undergrowth for puccini mushrooms, birch bullets, aspen bullets, chanterelles, and slippery jacks. For many people, it's not simply about gathering food. It's a ritual and almost a form of meditation. And then there are the famous Carpathian porcini mushrooms. Honestly, I don't think I have enough words to describe just how delicious they are. They are used to make rich mushroom soup, fried with potatoes, cooked in sour cream, and added to countless other traditional dishes. They are simply incredible. Many Ukrainians start going into the forest with their parents or grandparents when they are still children. The older generation teaches the younger one which mushrooms are safe to pick and which should never be touched. This knowledge isn't usually learned from books. It's passed on from person to person, generation after generation. An experienced mushroom picker will never reveal their favorite spot. That's almost a family secret. For New Zealanders, this tradition may sound a little unusual. Although New Zealand is home to many species of wild mushrooms, the culture of collecting them is much less widespread. Most people simply buy mushrooms from the supermarket, while for many Ukrainian families, a trip into the forest after summer or autumn rain is simply part of life. The same is true of wild berries. By the end of summer, Ukrainian forests are filled with people carrying baskets. Blueberries and cranberries are eaten fresh, turned into jams, juices, pies and traditional drinks, or simply frozen for the winter. And I have to admit, I really miss the taste of wild blueberries and cranberries. I still remember picking berries straight from the bushes in a forest, eating so many that my hands, my face, and probably even my ears ended up stained purple. Wild honey was another incredibly valuable resource. As far back as the time of Kievan Rus, there was a traditional practice known as bortnitstvo, or tree beekeeping. Instead of keeping bees in wooden hives, people collected honey from wild bee colonies that lived in natural tree hollows or in cavities carved high into living trees. Honey was used as medicine, as a natural preservative, and was even an important export traded with other countries. The forest fed people in times of peace and often helped them survive during the hardest years. But perhaps its greatest gift was teaching people to pay attention to nature. When you know where to find the first chanterelles, when the blueberries are ripe, or where St. John's wort grows, you are no longer just walking through the forest. You begin to understand it. And perhaps that is why, for so many Ukrainians, a walk in the forest is still more than a leisure activity. It is a way of reconnecting with the land where their ancestors once lived. Ukraine's forests didn't just feed people. Throughout history, they also saved lives. For centuries, as wars swept across Ukrainian lands, forests became places of refuge. Entire families hid among the trees. Resistance fighters found shelters there. Partisan groups operated from deep within the forests. And dense woodland and vast wetlands often became natural fortresses that protected those who knew the landscape well. Ukrainian resistance movements had been using forests as places of refuge long before the Second World War. In different periods of history, Cossacks and Haidamaki and members of the anti-Bolshevik underground all found shelter among the trees. But I will tell you more about that next time. We'll talk about entire homes hidden underground. A resistance fighter who only came out of hiding after Ukraine regained its independence. We will find out who the mysterious Chuhaister is and meet a tree that is more than 1,100 years old. Until next time, take care of yourselves and of course take care of the forests too. After all, who better than them to be the silent keepers of our secrets? Thank you for tuning in to Borsch Club on ORFM. Stay connected with us and listen to our episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and oar.org.nz. This is your host, Оля Вязенко, wishing you joy and a delicious day ahead. До зустрічі! See you next time!
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.